Minish's desk and fumbled around inside the top drawer. She held up a key. "Is this it?" she asked Wendy.
"Yes, throw."
Wendy caught the key and unlocked the supply closet.
"Get her in here," she told the boys.
Robbie and Irwin shoved Linda into the closet. Then they slammed the door and Wendy turned the key, leaving it in the lock.
"Let me out of here," Linda called. Her voice was muffled.
"Just shut up and listen to me, blubber," Wendy said. "You're on trial for being a stool pigeon, a rat, a fink, and a tattletale. How do you plead, guilty or not guilty?"
"Let me out of here," Linda shouted.
"Shut up," Wendy told her. "How do you plead, guilty or not guilty?"
"Not guilty," Linda said.
"Open the door, please."
She banged on it.
"Ladies and gentlemen of the jury," Wendy began, "it is your job to decide if Blubber is lying. Frankly, as the judge, I'm sure she is. We will hear the evidence from Jill Brenner, the class lawyer."
"Open the door," Linda called,
just as I was about to begin giving evidence.
"Open it or I'll scream."
"You do and you're dead," Wendy said.
Linda quieted down.
"Hey, wait a second," Rochelle said, and everybody turned to look at her because she never says anything.
"Who's Blubber's lawyer?"
"Blubber's lawyer?" Wendy asked. "She doesn't get a lawyer."
"Oh, yes, she does," Rochelle said. "Every trial has two lawyers, one for the defense and one for the prosecution."
"Stay out of this, Rochelle," Wendy said.
I hit my head with my hand. "You know something? She's right. We did forget to give Blubber a lawyer."
"I want a lawyer," Linda cried, banging on the door. "I'm the judge here, and I say we do it the way we planned."
"Look, Wendy," I began. "My father's a lawyer, and what Rochelle says is true. If we're going to do this, we're going to do it right. Otherwise, it's not a real trial. And since the trial was my idea in the first place, I say she gets a lawyer."
"Are you done?" Wendy asked me.
I nodded.
"Good,"
she said, raising her voice.
"Because you're ruining everything. You're turning chicken just like your chink friend."
"Don't you dare call Tracy a chink."
"I'll call her whatever I damn please. And that's what she is."
I glared at Wendy. Then I turned around and said, "Rochelle, you want to be Blubber's lawyer?"
"I'm not sure," Rochelle said. "I'll have to think about it." From inside the supply closet, Linda called,
"Rochelle, please be my lawyer."
"Okay," Rochelle said. "I guess I will. But I'll need some time with my client to get the facts straight." She stood up.
"Stay right where you are, Rochelle," Wendy said. "I'm running this trial."
She looked at me.
"And don't you forget it."
Rochelle waited to see what would happen next, and the rest of the class got very quiet. I thought about Tracy and how she said I'm scared of Wendy. And I thought about how worried I'd been on Monday when Wendy got mad at me and how good I'd felt when she wasn't mad at me anymore. And then I thought about Linda. Right that minute, it didn't matter to me whether or not she had told on us. It was the trial that was important, and it wasn't fair to have a trial without two lawyers. So I faced Wendy and I said, "I'm sick of you bossing everyone around. If Blubber doesn't get a lawyer, then Blubber doesn't get a trial."
"No lawyer."
Wendy folded her arms across her chest.
"Then no trial,"
I shouted, running to the supply closet. Before Wendy knew what I was doing, I unlocked the door and flung it open.
"Come out. I just canceled your trial."
"You'll pay for this," Wendy told me.
"You'll be sorry you were ever born, Jill Brenner."
For the first time, I looked right into Wendy's eyes, and I didn't like what I saw. That afternoon, Mrs. Minish said, "You've been such a nice, quiet class since lunch. I wish you'd act this way more often." After school, I went over to Tracy's. She was cleaning out the chicken coop. "Need any help?" I asked. Tracy tossed me a broom, and we swept together. "I'm not hanging around with Wendy anymore," I told her. "She acts like she owns the whole world."
"I've always known that," Tracy said.
When the coop was clean, Tracy picked up Friendly. "You want to hold him?" she asked.
"You know I do."
We sat down on the back steps. I held Friendly close and stroked his feathers. We were quiet for a while.
Best friends don't have to talk all the time. Finally, I said, Tracy, do you think it was Linda who told on us? I'm not sure. It could have been, if she was mad enough. I nodded. Or it could have been Wendy and Caroline. Yeah, I guess you're right, I said. It could have been. Or maybe even somebody else. I thought about that. Do you think we'll ever find out the truth? Probably not. Friendly flapped his wings, and I let go of him. He ran after a chicken and tried to climb on her back. He wants to mate, I said. Oh, him. Tracy laughed. That's all he ever thinks about.
Chapter 17. What's with her?
Mrs. Wu drove us to school the next morning, because Tracy's project on the explorers was too big to carry on the bus. It barely fit into the car. I was really glad I didn't have to take the bus, because this way I wouldn't have to face Wendy first thing. It's hard not to be scared of her and the things she might do to me. I've made up my mind, though. I will act the same as always, except I'll just ignore Wendy. That will teach her a lesson about threatening people. She'll never make me feel sorry I was born. When I walked into class, Linda was sitting in my place.
Your desk is over there now, Wendy said, pointing to where Linda used to sit.
Who gave you permission to move my desk, blubber? I asked, ignoring Wendy just like I'd planned.
Watch how you talk to my friend, Wendy said. Her name is Linda, and don't you forget it, BB.
Everyone laughed. What did BB mean? And since when was Linda Wendy's friend? Mrs. Minish came into the room. I went up to her. Mrs. Minish, somebody moved my desk.
Oh, the custodian is always moving desks around when he sweeps.
Can I move it back where it belongs? Mrs. Minish looked around the classroom.
Why don't you move it next to Donna Davidson's? There's a space over there.
I went to my desk, stood the chair on top of it, and pushed it across the room next to Donna's desk. When I did, she moved hers away and whispered,
Who wants to sit next to BB?
When it was time for gym, Mr. Witneski chose Bruce and Linda for the captains. Linda picked Wendy first. I waited and waited, but nobody chose me for a team. When I was the only one left, Linda told Bruce,
You get BB.
And all the kids on Bruce's team moaned.
I'll show them, I thought. I'll show them all. I will play so good I'll kick 10 home runs.
But I didn't. I kicked 3 fly balls right to Wendy, and each time I did, my team said, What can you expect from BB? At lunch, I found out BB means Baby Brenner. It could have been worse. Wendy put a diaper pin on my desk with a note attached to it. Baby Brenner better change her diapers. She's smelling up the whole room. After I read the note, I said, Ha-ha, remembering that my mother told me a person should always be able to laugh at herself. I tried to laugh as hard as the rest of the kids to show what a good sport I can be.
Goo-goo, Robbie Winters said. See Baby Brenner laugh.
He sounded like he was reading from a first-grade book.
See Baby Brenner eat, Caroline said. Baby Brenner eats only mushy-gushy foods like peanut butter, Wendy told everyone, because Baby Brenner can't chew big people's food yet.
I didn't finish my lunch. That afternoon, when I got on the bus, Wendy stuck out her foot and tripped me. I fell flat on my face and my books flew all over the place. I tried to laugh again, but this time the laugh just wouldn't come. Tracy helped me up, collected my books, and led me to the seat she'd been saving.
See, Baby Brenner, Wendy shouted. Baby Brenner hasn't learned to walk yet.
The next day, they all held their noses when I came near them. In the girls' room, Donna Davidson shoved me against the sink, and I got a black and blue mark on my leg. As I was getting a drink from the fountain, Caroline pushed me, and I wound up with water all over my face. During lunch period, Wendy wrote on the blackboard,
BB loves WW.
What's that mean? Erwin asked.
Baby Brenner is in love, Wendy said. Baby Brenner is in love with Warren Winkler.
That was just too much.
I am not, I told everybody. That's a big lie.
Then Wendy whispered something to Linda, and both of them laughed. On the playground, we jumped rope. I knew I'd be last on line, and I was. I bit my nails the whole time I was waiting.
What's for dinner? I asked Great Maudie, throwing my books down.
Whatever your mother brings home, Great Maudie said. She was in one of her yoga positions, with her legs crossed Indian style and her arms out straight.
I wish you knew how to cook.
I ran for my room, bumping into Kenny on the way.
Watch where you're going, he said.
Shut up, carnivore, I shouted at him. I heard him ask Great Maudie, what's with her?
Great Maudie sighed and told him, a bad day, I suppose.
I slammed my bedroom door and sat down at my desk. Friday, November 22nd. Dear Mrs. Sandmeyer, I hope you're having fun in Switzerland. Nothing is very good at home. Do you believe that bad things always happen in threes? Grandma once told me that, and I'm beginning to think it's true. Great Maudie turned out to be a terrible babysitter. She believes in cold showers, morning exercises, and crazy things to eat, such as carrot juice and wheat germ mush. She can't cook regular foods at all. That is, she won't. So every night, Mom and Dad bring our supper home from a takeout place. I am surviving on peanut butter. Did you know it's not bad with bananas? I've been thinking that the next time you go on vacation, and if it isn't this summer when me and Kenny are at camp, maybe we should ask Grandma to come after all. She's a good cook. She can make soup from real chicken. And besides, her hobby is cleaning. Mom already announced that we are going to spend all day tomorrow doing that. Things are not the greatest in school either. I am having this special problem. It doesn't have to do with reading or math or anything like that. It's much worse. A lot of people don't like me anymore. And for no good reason. I'm trying hard to pretend it doesn't matter, but the truth is, it does. Sometimes I feel like crying, but I hold it in. I wouldn't want to spoil your vacation, so I won't say anything else.
I hope your mother is having a nice birthday and that you hurry home to us. Tu m'as beaucoup manqué. Love, Jill.
Mom and Dad brought home Chinese food for supper.
What about me? I said. What am I supposed to eat?
Oh, Jill, Mom said. It's time you learn to eat like everyone else.
Everyone else doesn't eat that stuff.
What your mother means, Dad said, is that practically everyone likes Chinese food. It's very popular in this country.
Egg rolls and spare ribs and chow mein are not Chinese foods, I said.
If you don't believe me, just ask Tracy. She'll tell you.
Tracy's American, Kenny said. She's Chinese American. She eats hot dogs.
So? I swallowed hard and nibbled on my nails.
When did you start biting your nails again? Mom asked.
I didn't answer her.
Dad said, what about our deal? You haven't forgotten all those stamps at Gimbel's, have you?
I didn't answer him either.
When we sat down to supper, I didn't feel like eating anything. Not even the bread and cheese I knew Mom had put out just for me. My throat was tight, and I had a pain in my stomach.
I'm not very hungry, I said.
Are you getting sick? Mom asked, touching my forehead.
No, I managed to say before the tears came. I pushed my chair away from the table and ran for my room.
You want to talk about it? Mom asked a few minutes later as she sat on the edge of my bed.
What? I said like I didn't know.
Whatever's bothering you. It might make you feel better.
Nobody likes me anymore, I told her. Then I started crying hard. Mom held me.
I know. I know how it hurts.
I hate them all.
Now, now. Mom said, smoothing my hair.
I do!
Well, maybe that's the trouble. You can be a pretty tough character sometimes.
Even so, it still isn't fair.
Lots of things aren't fair.
You told me a person who can laugh at herself will be respected.
True.
So I laughed, I said. I tried to show I didn't care.
That's good.
But they don't respect me. They don't even like me.
I need a tissue, I said, sniffling.
Mom handed one to me and I blew my nose.
It's rough to be on the other side, isn't it? She asked.
Chapter 18. Never mind spitting. We spent all day Saturday cleaning the house, just like my mother promised. My job was dusting everything in sight. Dad scrubbed the bathrooms and kitchen, while Mom changed the beds and went to the supermarket. Kenny got to vacuum. Great Maudie watered the plants. I didn't start my math homework until Sunday night. I'm not supposed to wait till the last minute, but somehow I always do. It took me over an hour to finish, and then I gave the paper to Dad to check. He said it was perfect. I was really pleased. Talking to Mom on Friday night helped me feel a little better about going back to school on Monday. But even so, I wasn't taking any chances. I wouldn't wear a skirt for anything. Pants were much safer. That way, Wendy couldn't force me to show the boys my underwear. I called for Tracy and told her, "If they try to make me kiss Bruce, I'll spit on them. That's what he said he'd do to Blubber if she touched his lips."
"Never mind spitting," Tracy said. "If they try anything at all, you should bite them."
"I should?"
"Yes. I once read a news article about this woman who bit off another woman's finger. The human bite is very dangerous."
"I'll remember that," I said.
When we got to our bus stop, a group of kids was coming over the hill, heading in our direction. When I saw who they were, my heart started thumping.
"What's going on?" I asked.
"I don't know," Tracy answered, "but we better find out."
Wendy, Caroline, Donna, and Linda were first, with Robbie, Michael, and Irwin right behind them. They looked like an army.
"What are you doing here?" Tracy asked as they got to our corner.
"You get the bus at Hidden Valley."
"Not today," Wendy said, and she charged into me, knocking my things to the ground. Before I had a chance to pick everything up, Wendy grabbed my math book, and she and the others started playing catch with it.
"Cut that out," I yelled, trying to get my book back, but they threw it over my head. I couldn't stop them from doing whatever they wanted.
"Give it to her," Tracy hollered, and she bopped Robbie with her notebook. Just as Irwin caught my book, I kicked him as hard as I could, figuring he would drop it. But instead, he kicked me back and tossed my book into the street. "I won't cry," I thought. "I'll never let them see me cry. Never."
Our bus came along then, flashing its red stoplights. I ran into the street to get my math book, then Tracy helped me put my lunch back together because somebody had pulled it all apart. As I climbed onto the bus, the driver yelled at me for taking too long. When I finally sat down next to Tracy, I saw that Wendy and Linda were sharing a seat. Caroline sat alone, behind them. Later, when Mrs. Minish collected our math homework, I couldn't find mine.
"But I did it, Mrs. Minish," I said. "You can ask my father. He checked it for me."
"Maybe you left it at home." Mrs. Minish didn't seem to care. I said,
"No. I'm positive I put it inside my book."
"Maybe it fell out," Mrs. Minish told me.
"No,"
I said, suddenly sure of what had happened to it. "It didn't just fall out."
"Well, Jill, since this is the first time you've ever forgotten your homework, I won't count it against you."
"But I didn't forget it," I said. "I told you, I didn't forget it."
"All right, Jill, don't worry about it. If you find it, you can hand it in tomorrow."
"I'll do it over," I said.
"You can if you want to, but it really isn't necessary. Now, let's all take out our math books and open to chapter 3.
Wendy turned around and smiled. I wanted to kill her.
When we went to the girls' room, Wendy blocked the toilets and wouldn't let me use one until I said, "I am Baby Brenner. I'm not toilet trained yet. That's why I stink." I shook my head at her.
"You have to say it," Wendy told me.
"No way," I said. "I won't."
"Then I'll have to check your diapers myself."
I thought about making a run for it, but Wendy had Caroline, Donna, and Linda on her side, and I wasn't sure I had anyone on mine. So I said,
"You touch me and you're dead."
"Grab her, Caroline," Wendy said. "Grab her arms and I'll pull her smelly diapers off."
Caroline is bigger than me and stronger, too. As she came toward me, I shouted, "You always do what Wendy says? Don't you have a mind of your own?"
"I have a mind of my own."
"Then why don't you use it for once? Wendy doesn't even like you anymore, so why should you follow her orders?"
"Shut up, Brenner," Wendy said. "Don't listen to her, Caroline."
"She does too like me," Caroline said.
"Then how come she's always hanging around Linda? Didn't you see them this morning on the bus? I bet she's not even your partner for the class trip."
Caroline looked at Wendy. "We're partners, aren't we?"
Before Wendy could answer, Linda said, "I'm Wendy's partner."
She hung an arm over Wendy's shoulder. Caroline bit her lip, turned, and walked out of the girls' room. Donna followed her.
"Don't you ever answer for me again," Wendy told Linda.
Linda looked as if Wendy had slapped her in the face. I didn't wait around to see what Wendy would do next. I opened the door to a toilet and locked myself in the booth. I was really shaking. Before I came out, I checked underneath to make sure there were no feet in sight. That way I knew I was safe. Nobody called me Baby Brenner during lunch. Donna and Caroline moved their desks together, and Wendy invited Lori to eat with her. Linda sat alone at her desk, the way she used to. I took out my sandwich and looked at it, thinking how much better it would taste if I had someone to talk to. I hate to eat all by myself. I glanced around the room, wondering, should I or shouldn't I? Oh, I might as well try, I finally decided. You sometimes have to make the first move, or else you might wind up like Linda, letting other people decide what's going to happen to you. I stood up, walked over to Rochelle's desk, and said, "Hey, Rochelle, you want to eat with me?" Rochelle didn't answer right away, and for a second I was sorry I had asked her. But then she finished chewing, swallowed whatever was in her mouth, and said, "Why not?" I moved my desk next to hers. She had a peanut butter sandwich, too. Chapter 19. Put Your Money Where Your Mouth Is. Tuesday morning, on the way to school, Irwin called me some of his best names. I said, "The same to you," and everybody laughed, but not at me. That afternoon, we had our Thanksgiving program. The sixth graders put on a boring play about the Pilgrims, the Indians, and the first Thanksgiving. I wish our school could do a play like the one in Harriet the Spy, where everybody pretends to be a different vegetable. I would like to play the onion. I'd roll around the floor the way Harriet did in the book. I wonder if there really are schools where they do that kind of thing. When we got back to class, Mrs. Minish stayed out in the hall, talking to the teacher from the next room. So Robbie Winters had plenty of time to stick pins through his fingers and do his zombie act. When he shoved his hands in my face, I said, "What's so great about that? Anybody can do it." "Oh, yeah? Yeah? Including you? Including me? Put your money where your mouth is, Brenner." "How much?" I asked him.
"A quarter."
"You're on. Give me some pins." Robbie took the pins out of his fingers and handed them to me. I stuck one through the top layer of skin of every finger, being careful not to flinch as I did. Then I stood up, held my hands out straight, and walked around making zombie noises. "Exactly what is going on here?" Mrs. Minish stood in the doorway, watching me. "Jill, you're out of your seat." "Yes, Mrs. Minish." I hurried back to my desk, hid my hands under it, and pulled the pins out of my fingers. Robbie passed me a quarter. By lunchtime, it was easy to tell that Wendy and Lori were going to be best friends, and so were Donna and Caroline. Some people are always changing best friends. I'm glad me and Tracy aren't that way. Still, it's nice to have a regular friend in your class, even if it's not a best friend. I ate lunch with Rochelle again. She's kind of quiet, but I get the feeling that a lot goes on inside her head. So later, when it was time to go home, and we all ran for our lockers, I said, "Hey, Rochelle, you want to be my partner for the class trip?" She put on her jacket, closed her locker door, and said, "Why not?" I didn't bite my nails once that afternoon or night, and when Dad tucked me into bed, I said, "You know something? There's still a whole month to go before Christmas."
"So?" he asked.
"So, is our deal still on?" I held out my hands and wiggled my fingers to show him what I was talking about. "It's still on," he told me. "Good, because I think I can make it this time." We had just half a day of school on Wednesday. On the bus ride home, we played keep away with Robbie's hat, and the sixth graders taught us a song about the girls in France. The bus driver yelled, "Shut up or I'll report you to the principal!" Nobody paid any attention. When we got off the bus, me and Tracy stopped for the mail. Both of us had a packet of approvals from Winthrop. "Come over and we'll decide what to buy," I said. "As soon as I change." "Don't forget your album."
"How could I?" Tracy asked.
Kenny met me at the front door.
"Did you know the longest earthworm in the world measures 21 feet when fully extended?"
"I'm really glad to hear that," I said. "His mother must be very proud."
Hi, this is Judy Blume, author of Blubber, and I'm here in the studio with Pat Scales, my all-time favorite librarian. Pat has worked with kids and their families for years, first at Greenville Middle School in Greenville, South Carolina, and now at the South Carolina School for the Arts. I asked her to join me today because I've always felt you can't read a book like Blubber out loud and then put it away. Whether you're listening in the car or in a classroom, or even alone in your bedroom, the story and the characters lead to questions. There's a lot to think about. Good morning, Pat.
Hi, Judy. I have a question. How did you decide to write this story?
Really, when my daughter Randy was in fifth grade, she would come home at night and tell us stories about what was going on in her classroom. She was the shy, quiet kid, the observer like Rochelle in the book, sat in the back and watched what was happening. And clearly she was very disturbed by the class leader and what was going on and how they put a girl in that class on trial. But I don't think she felt brave enough to jump in and do anything about it. It's scary because you never know if everybody can turn and do that to you, which is why I think a lot of kids keep quiet.
My experience certainly has been that kids have asked for this book for years. They continue to ask for it. And one of the reasons is I think that they're Wendy's who are reading this book, they're Linda's who are reading this book, and they're Jill's who are reading this book, and even other classmates who may be bystanders watching. They all get something out of it. They all can identify in some way.
Pat, you've worked with kids for years in schools, and you've met a lot of Wendy's. What do you think makes a Wendy do what she does?
Well, I think that it's sometimes kids who are seeking popularity, or it may be the leader of the class, and they kind of are power hungry with their leadership. They may just be seeking popularity, or sometimes they're just seeking attention. And if they feel that they're getting it, it makes them go after it even more. Sometimes they're jealous of other people, and it makes them feel better. They may tease kids who are different. Picking on kids who are different elevates you, makes you seem important.
You know, the story really isn't about Linda Fisher's weight. It never was. I mean, Jill says right from the start, she names the kids in fifth grade who are much, much heavier than Linda Fisher, and yet nobody is giving them a hard time. It's that Wendy didn't really plan this. Linda Fisher gave a report on the whale, and she talked about Blubber, and it was the end of the day, and Wendy passed a note that said Blubber is a good name for her. If Mrs. Minish, the teacher, hadn't been asleep, and she was often asleep, I think, she wasn't a tuned-in teacher, she might have nipped it right then before it got out of hand. Just a word about teachers here, because I think teachers do play an important part. Pat, you worked with teachers. Did you see the difference in classrooms with teachers who were aware of the social dynamics, what was going on in those classrooms?
Sure, there's a big difference when a teacher is willing to get involved in open discussion with kids, and they can stop it from happening. And certainly one of the best ways to deal with it is through fictional characters and helping kids see through this character, this is real life.
I think what most kids really want to know is what can they do if it happens to them?
Well, I think they first have to talk with the teacher. If that's not working, go to the school counselor. Most schools have counselors. If that's not working, go to the principal. And certainly always, always talk with your parents about it. If there's also another kid in the school, maybe not even in your class, but a best friend or someone that you think you can trust, it's always a good idea to talk with them and maybe take them with you when you talk with the principal so that you don't feel all alone in there.
The kid who is being bullied feels so humiliated, sometimes blames herself or himself. It's such a terrible experience that they don't want to talk about it. But like you, I believe the best thing you can do if it happens to you, don't keep it a secret, because keeping it a secret makes it that much worse. I know when it happened to my son, he was getting sick at night because of the idea of going to school the next day and facing the fear. As one kid wrote to me, the fear is sickening. So don't keep that fear in. It's always better to talk to somebody about it. Talk to the people you trust most.
If you are uncomfortable talking about this, if it's happened to you and you feel like you need an icebreaker, please ask an adult, whether it be a parent or a teacher, to listen to this tape or to read the book, and then you can talk about it through the characters in this book and say, this is what I'm talking about.
I told you where I got the idea for the book, but I think, looking back, the reason that I wrote it was because I didn't want it to be a secret anymore. I wanted to bring it out into the open so that people could talk about it and kids could see how the other person might feel. You don't have to hit kids over the head with a baseball bat to get your point across. They know very well, and I know they know from the letters that they've written to me about the truth and what it can be like. So I hope that this story continues to help people open up and feel better about themselves. Pat, thanks so much for coming to the studio to talk with me about Blubber. I always like to hear what you have to say because you're so tuned in to kids and to their parents, too.
Thanks for asking me. It's a great way to communicate, to read and listen together.
This is Hallie Pfeiffer. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Blubber by Judy Bloom. This program was produced and directed by Charles Potter, executive producer Jacob Bronstein. Text copyright 1974 by Judy Bloom. Production copyright 2003, Random House Inc. All rights reserved.
Hello, this is Jim Dale, narrator of the Harry Potter audiobook series. Listening to audiobooks isn't just great entertainment. It's a great way for your family to experience and enjoy books together. Studies have shown that listening to stories read aloud helps children build vocabulary and improve their reading skills. It's an important step on the road to becoming a good reader, and one of the best ways you can help ensure a lifelong love of literature and reading for the children you care about. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.
This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Blubber by Judy Bloom. Read for you by Hallie Pfeiffer. Chapter 1. It's very foolish to laugh if you don't know what's funny in the first place. My best friend Tracy Wu says I'm really tough on people. She says she wonders sometimes how I can like her. But we both know that's a big joke. Tracy's the best friend I'll ever have. I just wish we were in the same fifth grade class. My teacher is Mrs. Minish. I'm not crazy about her. She hardly ever opens the windows in our room because she's afraid of getting a stiff neck. I never heard anything so dumb. Some days our room gets hot and stuffy and it smells, like this afternoon. We've been listening to individual reports on the mammal for almost an hour. Donna Davidson was standing at the front of the room reading hers. It was on the horse.
Donna has this thing about horses. I tried hard not to fall asleep, but it wasn't easy. For a while, I watched Michael and Irwin as they passed National Geographic back and forth. It was open to a page full of naked people. Wendy and Caroline played tic-tac-toe behind Wendy's notebook. Wendy won 3 games in a row. I wasn't surprised. Wendy is a very clever person. Besides being class president, she is also group science leader, recess captain, and head of the Goldfish Committee. Did Mrs. Minish notice anything that was going on, or was she just concentrating on Donna's boring report? I couldn't tell from looking at her. She had a kind of half-smile on her face, and sometimes she kept her eyes closed for longer than a blink. To make the time go faster, I thought about Halloween. It's just 2 days away. I love to dress up and go trick-or-treating, but I'm definitely not going to be a dumb old witch again this year. Donna will probably be a horse. She dresses up like one every Halloween. Last year, she said when she grows up, she is going to marry a horse. She has him all picked out and everything. His name is San Salvador. Most of the time, Donna smells like a horse, but I wouldn't tell her that because she might think it's a compliment. I yawned and wiggled around in my chair. In closing, Donna said, I would like you to remember that even though some people say horses are stupid, that is a big lie. I personally happen to know some very smart horses, and that's the end of my report. The whole class clapped, not because Donna's report was great, but because it was finally over. Mrs. Minish opened her eyes and said, Very nice, Donna. Earlier, when I had finished my report on the lion, Mrs. Minish said the same thing to me. Very nice, Jill. Just like that. Now I couldn't be sure if she really meant it. My report wasn't as dull as Donna's, but it wasn't as long either. Maybe the longer you talk, the better grade you get. That wouldn't be fair, though. Either way, I'm glad Mrs. Minish calls on us alphabetically and that my last name is Brenner. I come right after Bruce Bonaventura. Mrs. Minish cleared her throat. Linda Fisher will give the last report for today, she said. We'll hear 5 more tomorrow, and by the middle of next week, everyone will have had a turn. I didn't think I'd be able to live through another report. Are you ready, Linda? Mrs. Minish asked. Yes, Linda said as she walked to the front of the room. My report is, on the whale. Caroline and Wendy started another game of tic-tac-toe while Bruce went to work on his nose. He has a very interesting way of picking it. First he works one nostril, and then the other, and whatever he gets out, he sticks on a piece of yellow paper inside his desk. The hand on the wall clock jumped. Only 10 minutes till the bell. I took a piece of paper out of my desk to keep a record of how many times Linda said, while she gave her report. So far, I'd counted 7. Linda's head is shaped like a potato and sits right on her shoulders, as if she hasn't got any neck. She's also the pudgiest girl in our class, but not in our grade. Ruth Ellen Stark and Elizabeth Ryan are about 10 times fatter than Linda, but even they can't compare to Bruce. If we had a school fat contest, he would definitely win. He's a regular butterball. Blubber is a thick layer of fat that lies under the skin and over the muscles of whales, Linda said. And it protects them and keeps them warm even in cold water. Blubber is very important. Removing the blubber from a whale is a job done by men called flensers. They peel off the blubber with long knives and cut it into strips. Linda held up a picture. This is what blubber looks like, she said. Wendy passed a note to Caroline. Caroline read it, then turned around in her seat and passed it to me. I unfolded it. It said, Blubber is a good name for her. I smiled, not because I thought the note was funny, but because Wendy was watching me. When she turned away, I crumpled it up and left it in the corner of my desk. The next thing I knew, Robbie Winters, who sits next to me, reached out and grabbed it. Linda kept talking. And whale oil is obtained by heating the blubber of the whale. European margarine companies are the chief users of whale oil, and it also goes into glycerin and some laundry soaps and has other minor uses. Sometimes Eskimos and Japanese eat blubber. When Linda said that, Wendy laughed out loud, and once she started, she couldn't stop. Probably the reason she got the hiccups was she laughed too hard. They were very loud hiccups, the kind that you can't do anything about. Pretty soon Robbie Winters was laughing too. He doesn't laugh like an ordinary person. That is, no noise comes out, but his whole body shakes and tears run out of his eyes, and just watching him is enough to make anybody start in. So the next minute we were all roaring, all except Linda and Mrs. Minish. She clapped her hands and said, "Exactly what is going on here?" Wendy let out a loud hiccup. Mrs. Minish said, "Wendy, you are excused. Go and get a drink of water." Wendy stood up and ran out of the room. By then, Wendy's note about blubber had traveled halfway around the class, and I couldn't stop laughing, even when Mrs. Minish looked right at me and said, "Jill Brenner, will you please explain the joke?" I didn't say anything. "Well, Jill, I'm waiting." "I don't know the joke," I finally said, finding it hard to talk at all. "You don't know why you're laughing?" Mrs. Minish asked. I shook my head. "It's very foolish to laugh if you don't know what's funny in the first place." I nodded. "If you can't control yourself, you can march straight to Mr. Nichols's office and explain the situation to him." I nodded again. "I'm waiting for your answer, Jill." "I forgot the question, Mrs. Minish." "The question is, can you control yourself?" "Oh, yes, Mrs. Minish, I can." "I hope so." "Linda, you may continue," Mrs. Minish said. "I'm done," Linda told her. "Well, that was a very nice report." The bell rang then. We pushed back our chairs and ran for the row of lockers behind our desks. Mrs. Minish has to dismiss us at exactly 2:35, otherwise we'd miss our buses. It's very important to get on the right one. On the first day of school, my brother, Kenny, got on the wrong bus and wound up all the way across town. Since my mother and father were both at work, the principal of Long Meadow School had to drive Kenny home. I would never make such a mistake. My bus is H4. That means Hillside School, route number 4. I'm glad Kenny doesn't go to my school. Next year he will, but right now he is just in 4th grade, and only 5th and 6th graders go to Hillside. When I got on the bus, Tracy was saving me a seat. Caroline and Wendy found 2 seats across from us. Before this year, I'd never been in either one of their classes, but this is my 2nd time with Linda Fisher, and I've been with Donna, Bruce, and Robbie since kindergarten. "We had the best afternoon," Tracy said. "Mr. Vandenberg invented this game to help us get our multiplication facts straight, and I was 48, and every time he called out 6 times 8 or 4 times 12, I had to jump up and yell, 'Here!' It was so much fun." "You're lucky to be in his class," I said. "I wish he'd give Mrs. Minish some ideas." "She's the wrong type. You're telling me." As Linda climbed onto the bus, Wendy shouted, "Here comes Blubber!" And a bunch of kids called out, "Hi, Blubber!" Our bus pulled out of the driveway, and as soon as we turned the corner and got going, Robbie Winters sailed a paper airplane down the aisle. It landed on my head. "Pass it here, Jill," Wendy called. When I did, she whipped out a magic marker and wrote, "I'm Blubber, fly me," on the wing. Then she stood up and aimed the plane at Linda. The group of girls who always sit in the last row of seats started singing to the tune of Beautiful Dreamer. "Blubbery blubber, blah 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 blah." At the same time, the airplane landed on 2 6th grade boys who ripped it up to make spitballs. They shot them at Linda. Then Irwin grabbed her jacket off her lap. "She won't need a coat this winter," he said. "She's got her blubber to keep her warm." He tossed the jacket up front and we played keep away with it. "Some people even eat blubber," Caroline shrieked, catching Linda's jacket. "She said so herself." Ooh, disgusting, Ruth Ellen Stark moaned, clutching her stomach. Sick. The girls in the back started their song again. Blubbery blubber, blah, 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 blah. The bus driver yelled, Shut up or I'll put you all off. Nobody paid any attention. Linda picked the spitballs out of her hair, but she still didn't say anything. She just sat there, looking out the window. When we reached the first stop, Wendy threw Linda's jacket to me. She and Caroline ran down the aisle, and as Linda stood up, Wendy called back, Bye, Blubber! Linda stopped at my row. I could tell she was close to crying because last year, when Robbie stepped on her finger by mistake, she got the same look on her face, right before the tears started rolling. Oh, here, I said, and I tossed her the jacket. She got off, and I saw her race down the street, away from Wendy and Caroline. They were still laughing. Chapter 2. That's what you're going to be for Halloween? Linda lives in Hidden Valley. So do Wendy, Caroline, Robbie, and a bunch of other kids. It's a big group of houses with a low brick wall around it and a sign that says, Welcome to Hidden Valley. Speed limit 25 miles per hour. Across the street there is another sign saying, Watch our children. It's called Hidden Valley because there are a million trees, and in the summer you can't see any of the houses. Nobody told me this. It's something I figured out by myself. My stop is next. Me and Tracy are the only ones who get off there. The Wu family lives across the road from us. They have a lot of animals. All of this doesn't mean we live in the country. It's kind of pretend country. That is, it looks